Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, August 25th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's glad to have you with us. On today's show, Dan Nehmer will be here to highlight fisheries grants. Anastasia Tarman and Leah Geibel from the Alaska State Historical Library will be here with details about Alaska newspapers available online. Amy Skilbred from the Juno Community Foundation will fill us in on the school breakfast program. And Eileen Hosey will be here to talk about an upcoming Tai Chi class for seniors. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The body of a missing Fargo, North Dakota woman was found over the weekend in a river by kayakers. Police say it's Savannah LaFontaine Graywind. The 22-year-old, who was 8 months pregnant when she disappeared, had been missing for more than a week. A newborn baby was found alive last week and is believed to be Graywind's. Two people have been arrested and face kidnapping charges. Before the discovery, hundreds of people took part in search efforts for Graywind, including groups from the Native American community. The Star Tribune reports over the weekend people from the Dakotas and Minnesota helped in the search, including groups from the Turtle Mountain Reservation where Graywind once lived. The Fargo Native American Commission also came together for a community prayer service and to offer people support. In Alaska, a rural village has banished a former village police officer from the community, but the man has not left and claims he was denied due process. KYUK's Teresa Kotsarilis reports.
On August 10th, Akiak's tribal council banished Jacques Cooper from their community. 43-year-old Cooper is accused of bootlegging and selling marijuana. Local leaders say they've collected a series of sworn statements against him, but Cooper denies the allegations and remains in town. Last week, Akiak residents angrily confronted Cooper at his home and then live-streamed that confrontation on Facebook.
You are banished from Akiak action, and you can come back.
We can ban anyone for... The tribe can ban anyone.
Banishment is a traditional punishment in some Alaska Native communities that can be controversial. In an email exchange this week, the state's Assistant Attorney General, Corey Mills, wrote that, quote, banishment orders can present difficult constitutional issues that have to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Jacques Cooper claims that he didn't know about his own banishment order until it was issued, and that no evidence has been presented against him. He also says that Akiak residents have threatened him. Local leaders deny this and say that Cooper will get a proper hearing on his banishment if he requests one. For KYUK, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.
A personal finance website has ranked Minnesota's Leech Lake Tribal College number one in the nation for overall quality. Wallet Hub looked at price, faculty-student ratio, and graduation rates, among other factors, in its ranking of more than 700 schools. In Minnesota, most community colleges cost a little more than $5,000 a year for full-time students. Leech Lake's interim president, Pat Brooker, says the school stands out because of its family feel, its ability to be both a safe haven and a launching pad for students.
They can come and build strong relationships in this very stimulating environment, whereby we present a number of opportunities for them to explore as they make decisions about their life on into the future.
The college was established by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and has campuses in Cass Lake and Red Lake. The University of Illinois will no longer allow a war chant at sporting events. The university's India mascot, Chief Alinewick, has long been retired after it was found to be offensive by the National Collegiate Athletic Association about a decade ago. But the war chant has continued. The Chicago Tribune reports Native American groups are applauding the decision, while some fans are not happy to see the music end. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations. And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, August 28th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, 56 degrees here in the capital city. And with me now in the studio is Dan Namer. He is the National Program Director for the Saltonstall Kennedy Grant Program with the National Marine Fisheries Service. Dan, welcome to the show. Nice to have you in Juno.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your organization and this grant.
So this is part of NOAA, so the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. Underneath that, I work for the National Marine Fisheries Service. This solicitation is called the Saltonstall Kennedy Program, and the objective of it really is to reach out to fishing communities with opportunities for economic benefits, maintaining sustainable fisheries, and we're really looking for applications that demonstrate a direct impact on the U.S. fisheries.
Okay. Let's get to the details about those applications in a minute. Can you give us an example of maybe one of our listeners here in Juneau who might qualify for this or should be interested in this?
Absolutely. So that's a great question because this particular program is open to anybody that's a U.S. citizen. So that's individuals, that's corporations, for-profit, non-profit, universities, state agencies. So really we're open to almost everybody in the Alaska area.
Okay. And what might be an example of a fishery or a business or an opportunity that somebody might be interested in?
So we've got four priority areas, and I think we'll get into that a little bit later, but any type of work that's working with marine aquaculture, researching that, whether that be with bivalves and different shellfish, as well as anything that's marketing and promoting the fisheries here in Alaska.
Okay. So an oyster farmer, for example, might qualify, should maybe be listening right now.
Absolutely.
Or somebody who wants to oyster farm. What about someone who wants to farm some kind of kelp or seaweed, something like that?
Yeah, so we are looking for innovative new ideas, any place that someone feels that maybe we're not marketing it as well as we could. And so we're looking for everything from fisheries that are already ongoing, but we're trying to market them better, or if there's somebody that has an idea that maybe we haven't thought of, how to market that, how to promote that, and make sure that we're helping the communities.
Okay. And I noticed as part of this grant program, proposals are due by October 10th. Is that right?
Yeah. So we've got a couple of rolling submission deadlines coming up. The solicitation opened August 11th, and we're doing what's called the pre-proposal process right now. And those are simple two-page proposals letting the National Marine Fisheries Service know what kind of ideas are going to be coming in. And from that, we will send out letters encouraging or discouraging. And based on that, if people want to submit a full application, they actually have all the way until January the 8th.
Sort of test the waters.
Yep,
absolutely. Proposals.
So full proposals are a lot of work. They're very long. They're very in-depth. So this gives people an opportunity to do a short test run to see whether or not there's a lot of interest.
And that's by October 10th.
Correct.
Right?
October
okay.
the 10th for pre-proposals.
And I noticed four categories, kind of, sort of. You want to tell us about those?
Yeah, so there's four priority areas. Marine aquaculture is our first priority area. Adapting to long-term ecosystem change is our second. Promotion, marketing, and development, we've talked about a little bit. That's our third. And then lastly, we have territorial science.
Okay. Territorial science. What's that?
So territorial science would be science that's happening out in our territory. So we're talking in the Western Pacific as well as in the Caribbean. These are really data-poor areas right now, so what we're looking for is applications that collect more stock assessment data so we can make better management decisions as an agency.
So if there's an individual who's interested in doing research in that area, this might be a great opportunity.
Absolutely. Whether or not they actually physically are there, they can certainly partner with folks, and if their application comes in and is addressing that need, it would be something we're very interested in.
And then the third one you mentioned was promotion, develop, and marketing. What's that all about?
So, again, this is kind of the idea that if we've got fisheries here, whether it's in Alaska or anywhere in the nation, we want to make sure that we're marketing U.S. fishing and U.S. products. We don't want our fish being imported from other countries. And so we want to market those particular products. And then also we're looking for new ideas as the landscape changes, as we're having different changes on what's allowed to be fished or sizes of stocks, that if people have ideas to market a new species, whether it's for eating or whether or not it's for feed, those are things that we'd be looking for.
So this might be a marketing entity, not necessarily a scientist or a fisher person.
Absolutely, yeah. We have a lot of folks that come in with marketing ideas.
Okay. I understand you're going to be doing a webinar on Thursday. Is that correct?
Correct. So 10:30 Alaska time. It's a completely free webinar. We've got the information up on the Alaska Regional NIMS site, National Marine Fishery Service, and there's a URL for them to come in. They'll be able to see my screen as I go through a presentation, and there'll be a call number there where they can call in and listen to the presentation. We'll also have a question and answer session. So should they have questions about how to apply or what's eligible, we're able to help out there as well.
About how big is this program? How many people might get granted?
So that's an excellent question. We anticipate about $10 million worth of funds being obligated. That would equate to between 40 and 50 entities will actually be selected and recommended for funding.
Okay. And again, the proposals deadline is October 10th. And
so everybody should have their pre-proposals in by October the 10th. They'll hear from me directly in the form of a letter by November the 9th about whether or not they're being encouraged to submit a full proposal.
Okay. Give us the details on Thursday's webinar again, please. That was 10:30 a.m.?
10:30 a.m. Alaska time. And again, you can find the URL and the call numbers on the National Marine Fisheries Salt and Stall Kennedy page.
Okay. Salt and Stall, how do you spell that?
That's all right. So Salt and Stall would be S-A-L-T-O-N-S-T-A-L dash Kennedy, like the senator, K-E-N-N-E-D-Y.
Okay.
And so you'll hear us refer to it shortly as SK.
SK. The NMFS SK program.
Absolutely.
Well, Dan Namer, it's great to have you on the show. Let's see, is there anything we're missing? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to make sure everybody's aware of the webinar and that we're really encouraging everybody to get their applications in. This is an opportunity to receive funds from the federal government that's open to pretty much everybody.
And more information at the National Marine Fisheries Service website.
Absolutely.
Great. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
How you know?
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun.
But I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition. Gone fishing by a shady, weighty pool.
Shangri-La. Really La.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign, gone fishing, instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you aren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You aren't tied up, you dog. It's just plain old gone fishing. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. They each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Biting
at his eyes. Get away from me, boys. You bother me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Oh,
yeah.
Cumbrio Chamber Series and 350 Juno present A Call to Life. Variations on a Theme of Extinction, an essay on the implications of climate change with music by Rachmaninoff. Writer Kathleen Dean Moore, author of Great Tide Rising, and concert pianist Rachelle McCabe perform a moving work of words and music about humanity's bravest challenge. Sunday, September 3rd at 4 at Northern Light Church. Tickets at the door. For information, call 789-0140.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, August 28th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 15 minutes after the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Anastasia Tarman, and she is a librarian for the historical collections and oral histories at the Alaska State Historical Library. Anastasia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
It's so nice to have you.
It's very nice to be here.
So we have this absolutely beautiful new building right next door that we call the SLAM. Sometimes I have trouble understanding. There's so many great resources associated with that building and the other buildings in this neck of the woods. Can you help our listeners understand, say, where you are now and what resources are available?
Sure, yeah. So we're right next to the K2 building. So we, if you go upstairs to the second floor, the archives and the historical collections are up there. And the difference between the two is kind of nominal. We just want you to come up, come to the desk, and ask us for photographs, documents, any kind of documents that come from the the territorial period will be in the archives, government documents, memos, correspondence from governors. You can find diaries there, ship's logs, and newspapers.
Excellent.
Which is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, right? And before we get there, I was talking about your colleague Sandra Johnson, and I was just using the Alaska Digital Archives, which is something that you all maintain and operate. Is that right?
That's true.
And I'm working on a documentary on Tlingit art, and I'll tell you what, I found some very amazing historical pictures on there. They're absolutely beautiful, and working with Sandra was so easy, and getting those images and able to use those. So what a great resource.
Yes, thanks. And now you just reminded me that not everything we have is on that digital archives, but you can find quite a lot of documents as well.
And we can just walk in to the SLAM and go upstairs and see you and talk to you about this.
That's right, yeah. Or you can just find us on the web, and we'll help you from your home.
Okay. So among, you mentioned diaries, pictures, ship's logs, all of this.
Films, photographs.
Wow. Our newspapers, and this is kind of a new resource. Tell us about this.
That's right. Okay. So last year, we received a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. This grant is to digitize newspapers, Alaska State newspapers, historic newspapers. Currently, we are digitizing newspapers that start in 1866 and go up to 1922. The program has expanded, though, so we're hoping in the next cycle that we can digitize newspapers that go up to 1966. The newspapers will be ingested by Chronicling America, which is a database run by Library of Congress. Library of Congress also gives us all of our technical support.
Okay.
This database, Chronicling America, has newspapers from all over the country. There are nearly every state is participating in the program, and I'm pretty sure they won't stop until all of the states are participating. The database is searchable. It's, as I said, filled with newspapers actually dating back to the 1600s.
Wow.
Very diverse collection of newspapers from urban and rural areas, and diverse groups of people. They are free, the newspapers, and they're searchable.
Wow. Very cool. When did this come online? For us, or for you, give or take, recently?
For us, just recently. We just recently got our first batch in, which was 10,000 pages, or nearly 10,000 pages. It was technically over 9,000 pages. We will be putting up 100,000 pages by the end of 2008.
With a collection,
18. Sorry.
Yeah. With a collection like this, what do you guess people are going to be looking for?
Well, they can find. You know, one of the nice things about having all of the state's newspapers in one bank is not only are they searchable by topic, but all you know, much more data is there, and so researchers can do a cross comparison. People can also find vital statistics in newspapers. People can, find tide and weather facts. They can compare incidents across the states.
Figure out people's opinions, right?
Yeah.
You know, letters to the editor and opinion sections. On.
There's that, too. There are multiple uses.
Wow, very interesting. Yeah. So if somebody wanted to use this, where should they go and how should they do it?
They can go to the Library of Congress website. They can also come to our website at library.alaska.gov/hist. That's H-I-S-T for historical. Or you can just Google Alaska State Library Historic Newspapers. We also have a blog, and the address for that is akdnp.wordpress.com, or just Google Alaska Digital Newspaper Project.
Okay. Anastasia, what other services might surprise our listeners about what we can get at this great resource over here?
You mean the library?
Yeah.
We also have books, right? And we also can help you if you are thinking about whether you have something that can contribute to Alaska history. Feel free to bring it in, and we can look at it with you. We can't appraise items. We can teach you how to take care of your items. And we're always glad to we do serve as the state's repository for historical items. And don't forget that we also have a great museum downstairs.
Absolutely. Anastasia, is there anything we're missing or anything else you'd like to add?
Well, Jeff Brown was asking me, how were these newspapers chosen in the first place? We put together an advisory committee, and that was made up of volunteers. Of course, we didn't strong-arm anybody, but they went through an interesting process, and I think the newspapers were mostly selected on their geographical diversity. And also people were interested in on the committee were interested in long runs of newspapers. So we have now online the Alaska Daily Empire, Douglas Island News, and the Tlingit, which comes from Sitka. But we also have, 10 total. So that's just three that have made it to Chronicling America so far. So if you are interested in the next round, because we are applying for a next cycle in serving on the advisory committee, just get a hold of Leah Geibel or Anastasia Tarman. You can find us on those web pages I told you about at the Alaska State Library. The other thing is we are planning to support other Alaska institutions with supplementary projects. So if you have newspapers that you're interested in digitizing, and I know there are some people because they've contacted us. Let's get together and see what we can plan out. We're also meeting with educators to bring historic newspapers and other primary sources into the classroom. And we want to continue to educate Alaskans and other researchers on what a valuable historical research tool newspapers are. And, you can find out more about that at our blog, Alaska Digital Newspaper Project.
Okay. Anastasia Tarman, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else?
Thank you, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
All my babies coming home tomorrow. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Babies coming.
coming home tomorrow. Ain't that news, man, ain't that news. I got a letter just the other day telling me that she was on her way, and she wanted me to meet her at the station. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. In the letter, she told me she still loves me. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. In the letter, she told me she loved me. Ain't that news, man, ain't that news. She said she's sorry that she left. Found out she don't want nobody else. Said she wants me all to herself. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. Ain't that news, ain't that good news, man. I know that's good news. My baby's coming home tomorrow. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. I'm gonna have her a party at the station. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. Have a party at the station. Ain't that news, man, ain't that news. I can't wait to get a home where we can finally be alone. Disconnect my telephone. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. Ain't that news, ain't that good news, man, 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 ain't that news. My baby's coming home tomorrow. Ain't that good news, man, ain't that news. Good news, good news. Ain't that good news.
Brewfest is coming. K2 is proud to sponsor the Rotary Club of Juneau's 6th annual Capital Brewfest, Saturday, September 23rd from 1 to 5 at the Jack. Come enjoy great beer, live music, and fantastic food. All proceeds support the Juneau Housing First Collaborative and the humanitarian projects of Juneau Rotary. Tickets are limited and will sell out, so don't wait. Tickets available now, online only, at capbrewfest.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, August 28th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today. We're right at the bottom of the hour, and joining me now in the studio is Amy Skilbred. She's the executive director of the Juneau Community Foundation. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Also, great to be here.
Yeah. Adrienne Schwartz, she's the food services supervisor with the school district. Welcome to the show, Adrienne.
Thank you.
And Wayne Stevens is with the United Way. I forgot to get your – are you the director, E.D. Wayne?
Chief bottle washer, head janitor, president, CEO.
You name it.
As long as they don't call me late for dinner.
The whole thing. Well, welcome to the show to you too, Wayne. Nice to have the three of you here. Amy, shall we start with you just to talk about a little bit about what the Juneau Community Foundation does?
Yeah, the Juneau Community Foundation has been in Juneau for about 200 since the year 2000, and we are focused on increasing philanthropy in Juneau and using the funds that we get to meet the needs of people in Juneau. And we cover a wide variety of areas, from arts and culture funds to youth, parks, trails, and recreation, health and social services, and have a fair amount of work going in a lot of those areas, and give out, probably about $2 million a year.
And so you're a nonprofit, is that right?
Correct.
Board of directors.
We have a board of directors. Yep.
Okay.
14
and
people.
Where are you actually located?
We're up at 350 North Franklin Street, so it's right near Rainbow Food.
Okay, so you're the ED. Are there other people there at that physical location with you?
Yeah, we have another full-time staff person, Jamie Waste, who is working on our field of interest funds, which are the area funds, and engaging public members, community champions, board leaders, and others to raise funds and do projects and help now and help in the future.
Yeah, and Jamie Waste, long-time broadcaster.
Absolutely.
Here in public media.
Exactly. And we have a second part-time person, Jenna Ritecki, and she's helping with all of our admin and our scholarship programs.
And last question before we move on, Amy, what's one project that we might recognize that you've done?
Well, I just heard an ad for Housing First, and we've been assisting with the Housing First project. We helped with the Seward Statue Fund. We helped a bit with the whale and with the empty chair. So there's a fair number of projects that we've done. We also, our largest fund that we give out is from the Juno Hope Endowment Fund, and we give out about $1 million a year there in social services and work with the city on giving out their social service funds as well.
Okay. So. And now, the school breakfast program, how did this come to be?
Well, this is Adrienne, and it came to be for a variety of reasons. I started in my position as the food service supervisor during the 2008-2009 school year. Prior to that school year, the Juno School District was receiving SAC lunches that were prepared off-site and delivered. Starting in 2008-2009, we began preparing meals on-site at the schools and serving students right there at each school. And with that change came the ability to prepare and serve breakfast. And it has continued to expand tremendously with the help of United Way, Juno Community Foundation, Avista last school year, the Alaska Native Sisterhood, Camp 70,
the Benito and Francis C. Gagin Fund.
Thank you. And I believe there's a lot of local churches that are also helping. With all of that sponsorship and those donations, we have been able to expand the breakfast program this year to reach all of the students in the Juno School District.
Excellent.
So, yeah, every school is serving breakfast.
So there's a there's a free breakfast in the elementary and middle schools for all students. And that really came about with a conversation Wayne brought together several people who had been working on the breakfast programs in the school and a big volunteer effort. And we asked the school district to look at what would it cost to pay for the difference between what the school district can get reimbursed for with federal funds and what it would cost to provide a breakfast for everyone. And then working with the United Way and the Community Foundation, we worked out, figured out what it was and said, well, we could make up the difference for that and make it happen.
Okay. Wayne, how do school breakfasts fit with the United Way mission?
United Way's three areas of focus are health, education, and financial stability. And as we've talked with principals in the school, particularly Riverbend principal Michelle Beyer, it became apparent that food was a critical component to students' abilities to focus and pay attention and learn. And if you come to school hungry, the last thing you're going to think about is reading, arithmetic, writing. You're focused on the click of the clock until it gets to noon for lunchtime. And so the breakfast program is a great way for us in partnership with the foundation and the school district to help kids make sure that they're ready to read, ready to learn, ready to get going first thing in the morning. So we are a convener, collaborator, connector, and fundraiser. We work with 35-plus partner agencies. We don't provide direct service, but we do the annual campaign that will be kicking off here next month and work with community businesses, community employees to raise funds that ultimately this is how we get there to be able to support the Universal Breakfast Program.
Okay. Adrienne, what is a good school lunch? What should be in one? Let's talk nutrition and variety.
Well, for breakfast and lunch.
Oh, sorry, I meant to say breakfast.
That's okay. We meet the federal meal requirements, which for breakfast typically consists of having a protein, a fresh fruit, a milk, and then sometimes a grain in addition to that. And so when students come through the line, we are trained, make sure our staff is trained to ensure that students are receiving those essential nutritional components, and then the same is true for lunch. of course.
And then what if they want to trade once they're out in the cafeteria?
Once they're out in the cafeteria, they're allowed to make their own choice. And even as they come through the line, for breakfast, we have a choice of a cold entree and a hot entree, typically. We have a few schools that do not always have a hot entree choice because they're limited in terms of facilities. But for the most part, there's quite a few options for the students.
Okay.
Yeah, and new this year is breakfast is open to all students in the middle school at no charge. Last year we started all students in the elementary schools at no charge. Mm-hmm. And then the high schools, we added funding this year so that if you were a reduced lunch or a reduced breakfast, you're now free as well, so that that charge is covered. Just it can be hard for kids to go through, and you know, you get tagged as someone who needs assistance. And so we're just trying to make it easy for all kids to get food.
Okay. If somebody in the community wanted to help support this program, how can they do that?
Any number of ways. They could make a large contribution, philanthropic contribution, via the Juno Community Foundation. If they wanted to make a small payroll deduction, they could do it through United Way. It just depends on the level of involvement folks are interested in.
All right, so that's financial. And what?
I don't know. Are there volunteer opportunities?
Yeah. There are volunteer opportunities. We would always welcome folks to come in and help serve our meals. And so if people wanted to do that, they could call me directly. My phone number is probably listed on the website, but it's also 796-5384. I would love to hear from folks willing to do that. And just I want to put a plug in to the public here and to all the folks that made it possible for the school district to be able to offer this universal breakfast program. So the school district would like to say thank you for that. And just as an example, our first day of school, we served 266 breakfasts. Last Friday, we served 757.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be very popular.
Okay. Are there any fundraisers or events coming up that we should be aware of?
Our annual campaign kicks off in early September. Our annual report was just in the newspaper last week. You should see in your mailbox here in the next 7 to 10 days our annual campaign brochure and return envelope. If you're a company, if you'd like to have us come in and do a presentation and help a company set up payroll deduction for their employees, it's real easy. We'd be glad to help. Anybody can write a really big check to the foundation at any time.
Remind us what your website is, Wayne.
UnitedWaySeak.org, like Southeast Alaska.
Okay. Adrienne, what's your website?
It is JunoSchools.org.
Okay, and how about for the Juno Community Foundation, Amy?
The Juno Community Foundation is JunoCF, as in communityfoundation.org, and you can make a donation either with a check or with a credit card through our website.
Sounds good. Anything we're missing, anything you'd like to add?
We hope that all kids go and take advantage of it.
Great. Thank
go
you all
breakfast.
For your time. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 28th of August, 2017. It's the birthday of the illustrator Tasha Tudor, born in Boston, 1915, illustrated almost 100 children's books, including classics like Mother Goose, Little Women, and The Secret Garden. It's the birthday of the poet Rita Dove, born Akron, Ohio, 1952. Her father was a chemist, a research chemist at Goodyear. Her mother loved to read and encouraged her children to read widely. Rita Dove remembers reading the Iliad when she was 10 years old. A high school teacher took her to hear the poet John Ciardi, and Rita Dove was entranced by it. She said, "I didn't know writers could be real, live people, because I never knew any writers. Here was a living, breathing, walking, joking person who wrote books." And then she read Sylvia Plath's poem, Daddy, and Dove said, "It was the first time I realized you didn't have to be polite." It's the anniversary of the March on Washington in 1963. More than 200,000 people gathered. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at the Lincoln Memorial. There was no violence, not one single arrest. It's the birthday of the father of German literature, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, born in Frankfurt, 1749, who gave us the epic drama Faust. He moved to Italy when he was a young man, returned to Germany, fell in love with a woman who was 16 years younger, Christiane Vulpius. She was 23. And they moved in together, lived for 18 years together, unmarried and with children. When Napoleon, having invaded Germany, his soldiers, who were drunk, broke into their home in Weimar one evening. Goethe was terrified, but Christiane was yelling at the soldiers and fending them off hand to hand, trying to protect the man of the house. After a long skirmish, she pushed them out of the house, barricaded the kitchen so the soldiers couldn't steal any more of their food, and out of grateful to this brave, steadfast woman, Goethe went down to a church the very next day, and he married her. And in the very same year, 1806, Goethe published a preliminary version of Part One of his great work, Faust, the story of a brilliant scholar who makes a deal with the devil. An epic poem which has everything an epic poem should have: seduction, murder, sleeping potions, illegitimate love child, a stray dog who transforms into the devil, contract signed with blood, imprisonment, dungeons, heavenly voices, and so on and so forth. Faust, sometimes called Das Drama der Deutschen, the drama of the Germans. Goethe spent 50 years working on it, and he finished Part Two in 1832, in the year of his death. Here's a poem for today by Charles Simic, To Boredom. I'm the child of rainy Sundays. I watched time crawl like an injured fly over the wet windowpane, or waited for a branch on a tree to stop shaking, while grandmother knitted, making a ball of yarn roll over like a kitten at her feet. I knew every clock in the house had stopped ticking, and that this day will last forever. A poem by Charles Simic, To Boredom, from Scribbled in the Dark, published by Echo, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, comparing car insurance rates from multiple insurers so shoppers can evaluate options in one place. Now that's Progressive. Comparisons available at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, August 28th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 17 minutes until the top of the hour. And here in Studio A now, with me is Eileen Hosey. She is a case manager for Southeast Senior Services. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you.
Right.
And Southeast Senior Services, you're under the umbrella of Catholic Community Services, is that right?
That is correct, uh-huh.
And how would you describe Southeast Senior Services' mission statement?
Probably the most important thing is that we do whatever we can to help a senior stay independent and safe in their home as long as possible.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And so these Tai Chi classes are part of that, which help reduce falls, you were telling me about.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest dangers for seniors is falling. And once you fall and become injured, if you're hospitalized, for instance, if you're hospitalized with a fractured hip, 40% of the people never go back to independent living. That's a pretty staggering statistic. Now, earlier this summer, I heard a little tidbit, and it caused me to really stop and think, and that is that sitting is the new smoking. Well, we talked about that at work, and we realized that, you know, we've heard over the last couple of years that in order to stay active and vital as a senior, do a lot of things like crossword puzzles and brain games. But the new research shows the most important thing is being up and walking. Keeps your brain going, keeps your body going. Tai Chi allows you to become stronger. It helps your balance, your flexibility, your strength. It decreases your pain level. It helps your energy level and your emotional outlook, because there's a very meditative quality to Tai Chi also. So
I bet.
Yeah.
So this is going to be happening Tuesdays and Thursdays, is that right?
Right. Starting September 5th in about a week, Tuesday and Thursday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., downtown Juneau in the Filipino Community Hall. And our instructor this time will be Josie Lynn Ferrer, a certified Tai Chi instructor.
And what is the cost?
There is no cost. It's free.
Okay. And I'm thinking of the Filipino Community Hall. It's pretty big inside. Is there a cap on the number of people that can join? Or?
We usually like about 20 is okay. The maximum, because the teacher, Tai Chi, it's going to be twice a week. So the first two or three times you're going to learn moves, and they build upon each other. So your teacher's going to watch. The instructor will watch how the moves progress. And so she likes to be able to see. And I think there's a mirror up there, and you can watch your progress. And
From what you've heard, people must enjoy these classes.
People love the classes. People repeat the classes. We occasionally have a level two for people who have completed this. But now, if you've taken this before, you can take it again. We're having enough room.
And what age group are you targeting?
Age 60 and up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And if people want more information, Eileen, where should they go for that?
They can call me, Eileen Hosey, 463-6113. If I'm not there, one of my colleagues will pick up. And I can, it's a little late to mail the forms out, but I can email them to you. You can stop by our office at 419 6th Street and pick up an application form. And if you have any questions or comments, we welcome a call.
Are there any requirements or physical condition that people should be in for this class?
You have to be able to stand up for about an hour. And if you need to sit down occasionally, you can certainly do that. Just wear comfortable clothes. You can wear tennis shoes or your socks. That's about it.
All right. This is Tai Chi classes for people 60 years and up on Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Filipino Community Hall downtown from 5:30 to 6:30. Right. Admission is free.
Absolutely free.
But you do want people to sign a form.
Yeah, there is an application form. It's going to ask you kind of be like your personal goals. Let me see if I have a copy of that here. I think I do. What will you hope will happen as a result of the class? What are your expectations? And then discuss this with your instructor, and if it's possible to make it happen, they will do that.
And September 5th, that's next week,
next
right?
Next Tuesday. Okay. Yeah, next Tuesday.
And for more information, they can call you at 463-6113?
That is correct, yep.
All right, Eileen Hosey, anything else that you'd like to add?
Nope. Remember, sitting is the new smoking. And if you get up and move around, you'll be much happier.
Maybe
and
we should start standing up here
and do our
in the
program.
Studio. Yeah.
Be a good example. Yeah.
Thanks, Eileen.
You bet. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right.
This is Bird Note. We're walking along a stream, and we hear what sounds like a sneeze in a dense thicket. Should we reach for binoculars? Or maybe a handkerchief? This sneezy song belongs to a willow flycatcher, a small gray-green bird singing from atop a nearby shrub. Willow flycatchers nest across the northern two-thirds of the U.S. and southernmost Canada. A subspecies, known as the southwestern willow flycatcher, nests in the southwest as far east as Texas. In June, territorial males sang almost nonstop, and with a little less gusto in July. Before long, their sneezy songs will fall silent. By late August, with their young fledged and out on their own, willow flycatchers begin a long migration to winter in southern Central America. Some will travel 4,000 miles to reach southern Panama, quite a trek for a bird weighing less than half an ounce. The southwestern willow flycatcher was listed as endangered in 1995. It's just one of 300 bird species that can benefit each time Congress votes to continue funding the Endangered Species Act. Learn more at birdnote.org.
Today's show brought to you by Forterra, saving the places that are keystones of a sustainable future in the Pacific Northwest.
For tuning in to a Juno afternoon today. Tomorrow on the show, Steve Quinn will highlight youth hockey opportunities. Ishmael Hope and I will be on the show, and we'll be talking about a new documentary, Lineage: Tlingit Art Across Generations, which premieres tomorrow night, Tuesday. We'll get a preview of a family concert this Friday by the Stringmans, and Student Services Director Bridget Weiss will be here. And she'll be talking about the Kinder Ready Preschool at Harborview. So those interviews and more tomorrow on a Juno afternoon. Thank you.
40 years ago, the first barrel of oil flowed down the Trans-Alaska pipeline.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it goes, shh, and I just woke up and I went, oil's in.
Midnight Oil is a new series and podcast from Alaska's Energy Desk about the pipeline that shaped the state. Visit ktoo.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Few more minutes here on a June afternoon. Let's take a look at the weather. Tonight's forecast calls for rain mainly before 7 p.m., then cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low around 48. And let's see, Tuesday calls for increasing clouds with a high near 59. There's no mention of rain tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, rain before 1 p.m., then showers after 1. And the rain could be heavy at times. Thursday, showers likely cloudy with a high near 49. And Friday calls for showers likely cloudy with a high near 49. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon.